Hello, everybody, and welcome to 100 Year Real Estate Investor. We are hosts Jake and Gino, and this is a show dedicated to long-term personal financial engineering. Gino, how's it going?
I'm doing great, Jake. We got a great guest on for you today, brother. How you doing?
Always making it happen, big man. Our guest is the former executive vice president and chief marketing officer of Chick-fil-A and author of Covert Cows, How Faith, Cows, and Chicken Built an Iconic Brand. During his 34-year tenure, he was integrally involved in the company's growth from 184 stores and $100 million in annual sales in 1981 to more than 2,100 stores and more than $6.8 billion sales in 2015. So without further ado, Steve Robinson, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jake. I appreciate it. Good to be with you and Gino again.
Hey, it is our pleasure, and we're always looking to learn from the best. So some people believe that over the long term, Steve, a solid brand actually offers the biggest return on investment in business. I just want to get your thoughts on that and hear what you think about that.
Well, I firmly believe that, and I believed it before I went to Chick-fil-A, and then spending 35 years there, I got a close view of seeing it come true again. I tell people that my career was a fulfillment of my dream. And, you know, it's kind of fun when you work in the middle of your own dream. And Chick-fil-A was basically just focused on selling sandwiches when I joined them. I remember telling Truett one time that his favorite verse, Proverbs 22:1, a great name is to be more favored than silver and gold. I told him that could also be the definition of a brand. It was during my last interview. And he said, what's a brand? So that gives you some idea of what the journey was like. The real answer, I think, the bottom line on your question is when you have a great brand, your customers become advocates and you create growth. They become your marketing agents and you create this growth engine because you've got these loyal customers and you're not dependent upon a marketing department to drive transactions, to drive sales. You have these thousands or millions of customers who do it for you. And when I left Chick-fil-A, that's what happened. We literally knew from research who our raving, we called them raving fans were. We knew how often they came. We knew how much they spent. And over time, we knew what percentage of our customer base they became. And they were the ones, when I left, that were driving Chick-fil-A success. And they're the ones in even greater numbers today. So the answer to your question is a great brand is one where people think they're going to always get a great experience. So they're willing to pay full price. They're willing to come more often. And to my previous point, they're more than willing to tell other people about it.
Is it their success as well, though? Because I almost feel like I'm a raving fan of Chick-fil-A. And I feel like when Chick-fil-A wins, I win. I don't know why that is, but it's weird, if I'm being honest.
You take ownership in the brand.
Yeah.
Chick-fil-A has become one of your favorite brands. I like to say when somebody has adopted a brand as part of their lifestyle, then that means that brand is part, they can't live without it. So whether it's Chick-fil-A or BMW or Apple or any other, you know, high profile favorite brands out there, there are a lot of people who get to a point that they cannot see themselves without that brand being part of their life. And that's what, fortunately, that's what Chick-fil-A has become for you and millions of others. And people like you help drive their success because they tell others and they brag on them. And to Chick-fil-A's credit, still, I think they're doing an awesome job on delivering the guest experience that you brag about. And in
but
turn,
that's how I want to be treated. That's what I want in my life.
You want to be, right. And then
that's,
when your
that's the interaction
treated,
I'm looking for. Yeah.
So when your friends get treated that way, you can puff out your chest and say, I told you so.
Steve, before I ask my question, I want to pontificate for just 1 minute, because the reason why I got you on a second time, if you haven't heard Steve's first interview on the Jake and Gino channel, go on the Jake and Gino channel. That's a longer form show. What you just said is the career is the fulfillment of your dream. And I want all the listeners to really espouse to that. And I wish I had met you 15 years ago. I wish I had known this material 15 years ago. I would have been doing Jake and Gino 15 years ago. I didn't know it. I didn't find out about it. I didn't find out about character, chemistry, and competency. I didn't learn about all these things until recently. So that's why we have you back on. And that's why I would call you sort of a mentor. I mean, Jake and myself, we've been listening to your story. We've been reading your book. We've been following your company, your brand. And that's why we wanted to have you back on, because I want people to hear this message because it's important. It's not just a job. I want everyone out there to create impact in their lives. Go find a career that you love. Go find something that you truly enjoy, that you're truly passionate about. The money will follow. But if you follow your career, like you said, and you follow your dream, you can create impact. So I just wanted to share that with you, because going through it, reading the book, I wrote a blog on your book. I mean, going through that book is just, to me, was life-changing with the customer experience. Become from assessing a customer to a raving advocate. That's really important. That's how you create an amazing brand. But how long did it take for Chick-fil-A to develop that established brand? I mean, it seemed like it took a while, but when you look back at it, time goes so quickly, doesn't it?
It took a long time. Probably wasn't until around 2000, 2001, when we had probably had approaching 1,000 street stores. We just hit $1 billion in sales. And we had basically gone through almost 10 years of being focused on developing the freestander concept. And quite frankly, our first 10 years of that journey, we had to really hunker down on operational excellence, because under my group's leadership, we were doing a lot of customer experience research, and we were finding out that the experience was woefully inconsistent when we first started going to the street. And I'm talking about food, service.
That's got to be the hardest thing in business, though, a consistent experience across the board.
Well,
I can't think of anything harder.
And particularly when you have a brand that is pushed to the retail level under the direction of local leadership, they're the ones that are empowered to do it. But that means they're also the ones that are responsible to consistently deliver the brand promise. Mm-hmm. And we weren't. It wasn't until about 2001 or so that we started seeing numbers where we had narrowed those operational variance ranges to where we were getting to be more consistent. Now, that's an important backstory.
We need to hear that, because how'd you get there?
Because I think we realized that if we were going to be, we'd already started the journey. We want to be a great brand. And it took time for people to understand that brand wasn't marketing.
Yes.
Brand was the totality of the customer touch points, the totality of the customer experience, whether it was in a store, in the community, or through advertising. Didn't matter. But we had crossed the bridge now where people were focused, okay, we want to have a great brand, because we can see that as the brand is stronger, operator opportunities better, income opportunities better, sustainability is better, et cetera. Okay, so we're starting to now really move into an area where we had focused on zero defects, the system that had been developed by Lexus. We completely re-engineered not only our operational standards, but how they were measured, how operators were held accountable to them, how they impacted whether operators could potentially have another location in their portfolio. Okay, so follow that now into the mid-2000s, and we're becoming a lot more consistent with operational excellence. And we really, quite frankly, are sitting around saying, okay, what's the next level of the brand? Because what we're learning from the brand, one of our consultants said, is you're the best fast food brand out there, but you're basically the best of a bad lot.
A low bar.
Yeah. Low bar. And you're still seen as fast food. You're just seen as another one of the field of brands. You're the best one, but your same store sales reflected. We were running 4 or 5% same store sales growth, which was back then considered very healthy. And we go to the seminar, I think it was 1996 or 97, don't hold me to that. Sure, Kathy gave a speech, and for the third time, he asked the operators to instruct their team members, and when somebody says, thank you, please say my pleasure back. And for the first 2 years of this, most operators' reaction was, my plate's full just trying to meet your operational standards. Get the food right, get the order right, be accurate, be fast, be clean. And you're asking me to do something warm and fuzzy that I'm afraid might actually slow service down. Well, by year three, he makes this request again, and I'll never forget it. Dan Cathy, his oldest son, and I are sitting next to each other in the front row listening to Truett. I have a video of it, of him saying this again. And I turned to him, and he turned to me, and he said, Dad, serious about this? And basically, Dan was looking at me, and he didn't say it, but he was implying, what do you got to do about it? And my answer to him was, Dan, that means we got to figure out institutionalize my pleasure across 50,000 team members. That's what it means.
Yeah.
Because if we can do two pickles on every crucial sandwich, then we have to figure out how to do my pleasure every time too. And you can't just go out and do it purely. Sure, to ask you to do this, won't you please do it? So we made a decision, and I'm still answering your question here.
I'm loving this. Please don't stop. Just carry on.
We made a decision. All right, the next generation, the next layer of the brand experience, if you will, it's going to make us different, is to incorporate genuine hospitality into the spirit experience. And we started visiting companies and locations that were marked for great hospitality, Ritz Carlton, Nordstrom's, Apple Stores, USAA Insurance, Southwest Airlines. And we not only visited their customer retail points, but we visited their home offices. And how do you institutionalize this hospitality experience, this service engagement experience that you have out there, you know, like the Apple Genius Bar and things like that? And we learned a lot. And what we finally came to the conclusion was we've got to approach hospitality the same way we do two crucial pickles, or the waffle fries are always prepared at the right temperature and salted the right way, and every bun is buttered. We've got to have clear standards of hospitality performance, and then we got to measure them. So we started doing our own customer research with our customers and competitive customers, and exposing them to different potential hospitality behaviors, first in small groups and then in test stores. And I'll shorten this story. We spent 7 years identifying the things that customers seem to appreciate the most in the environment of a Chick-fil-A experience, in the dining room, as well as in the drive-thru. And we landed on things like flowers on the table, refreshing beverages free without asking, quietly cleaning tables, carrying large orders to the table, bagging large orders without having to be asked. What bad weather, people that are carrying umbrellas to help people out to their cars, building a computer interface system with an iPad so we can take orders person to person instead of through a metal box outside, building canopy covers to not only protect our team members, but protect the customer, building better outdoor seating with ventilation, air cool, on and on. But we didn't just pull these things out of the air. We pre-tested them to make sure that people valued them. And then we had to figure out how to have team members execute them. So they came off as natural. They came off fluid. And then developed training modules, research. We had to track how we're going to track performance in the restaurants. We used mystery shoppers. And then we got to the point where we said, okay, these are now the standards in service, hospitality, just as these are the standards over here in operations. And by the way, Mr. and Mrs. Operator, if you're not in the top 20% on both those big metrics, operational excellence and hospitality, then you're not going to be eligible to be considered for a second location. Hello. So what we basically did was use the voice of the customer, the research, and the measurement thereof to drive performance. We didn't do it through field staff badgering operators. And we resourced the operators. These are the behaviors. We did the videos. We did the training modules. We gave them, they got the research every month, so they knew how they were performing, et cetera. And it took 7 years to develop that, roll it out. And I have to tell you, within the first year of rolling that out, our same store sales growth more than doubled. And we'd seen that in the test stores. And then we came back, by the time we got to 2014, 2015, when we went into the college football playoff and we started doing network media nationwide, by the time my last year I left, we were on a double-digit sales increases. But we were not driving those sales increases out of Atlanta. They were being driven by those 50, 60, 75,000 team members, how they were treating customers, still delivering great food. And those customers, like we talked about previously, going out and talking about it. I mean, I go everywhere. I mean, I go out on the range to hit golf balls, and I got buddies telling me about their latest Chick-fil-A experience. Now, the warmest part of that to me is not only the fact that they reflect love of the brand, but every time I hear those stories, that I know there's an operator who's following the guidelines, who's doing it. Yes. And most operators now have in the neighborhood of 125 to 150 team members.
Wow.
Now, you think about and you got turnover. It's not as high as the rest of the industry, but you got turnover. They have got to create a culture that Truett described with my pleasure, where they have got to role model and convince their 125 team members, I expect you to treat people with dignity, respect, and honor. And this is how it looks like it. This is what it looks like when we do it. It's these kind of behaviors. So the cultural preface of honor, dignity, and respect, which is embedded in looking somebody in the eye and say, my pleasure, which is what Truett was really getting at. The fact that operators have adopted and learned that that cultural foundation of honor, dignity, and respect is the precursor of making my pleasure and every other hospitality behavior work is kudos to them. Mm-hmm. And now, yes, Chick-fil-A gives them everything they need to do it, measure, hold them accountable. They tie their future store performance opportunities to it. It's the operators are the flywheel, and Chick-fil-A's focus on how do we equip those operators so the wheel keeps spinning.
And how do you incentivize them? I love that. It's
That's
awesome.
How you incentivize? You but don't more, browbeat more so though, them. How Steve, do you incentivize?
How has Chick-fil-A differentiated itself in terms of retaining those team members? Because you mentioned that the retaining of the team members has been higher. So what's the key to that?
Yes. Well, the first key is how the operator is incentivized. If you don't remember from our previous conversation, the operator agreement, which has not changed since Truett created it in 1967, is Chick-fil-A finds the restaurant location, they build the restaurant, they equip the restaurant, whether it's mall, street store, in line, in a ballpark, it doesn't matter. Chick-fil-A makes all the investment. They select an independent contractor. They call an operator. The operator really has very little choice about where he or she may go. They may be given an opportunity to go somewhere, and if they want to be an operator, that's where they go. But anyway, Chick-fil-A makes all the investment. They select an operator. The deal works where the operator pays a percentage of gross sales off the top for the brand, the use of the brand, and all the support systems, like I've described, operational, marketing, service, accounting, et cetera, IT. After all their expenses, including team members, Chick-fil-A and the operator split the net operating profit 50-50 every month. Okay, so embedded instinctively in that, the operator has an incentive to grow the business, but to attract customers, keep customers. If you want to attract and keep customers, then you better attract great talent and keep them. Mm-hmm. And because half of the net profit is theirs, they have complete, and the other half is Chick-fil-A's, and we're entrusting them to manage their P&L to the mutual benefit of both parties. They have complete freedom to decide not only who they hire and what they pay them, but how they develop them, how they train them, and how they incentivize them to hang around. So there's scholarship programs. There's one major scholarship program, the Chick-fil-A Inc. funds. But a lot of the operators supplement that or have an incremental one of their own based on tenure. There's advanced education where operators will pay for someone to do some sort of advanced learning. There's a lot of operator or market-sponsored learning opportunities that is team member-focused where the operators go into get together and they focus on some aspect of the business, maybe operational, maybe hospitality. Maybe how they grand open stores in their community. Maybe a market-wide promotion, you know, with a partner like the Atlanta Braves. The point is they have freedom to do whatever they think is in the best interest of not just keeping their team members, but encouraging them, helping them to thrive. A lot of them stay much longer. A lot of them desire to be an operator after several years. But if nothing else, when they leave Chick-fil-A, they learn something. They didn't just have a job. They actually learned something. Mm-hmm. And so that, again, it's all built on that foundation, that mm-hmm. that hub flywheel of the independent contractor. And the way Truett structured that deal back in 1967, it's never changed. So operators know they can trust it. And if they increase their sales, they increase their income. There's no caps. Nobody's going to change it. So you got operators making a lot of money. And because they have a lot of cash flow, they have the discretion on what piece of that, what portion of that they want to invest in their team.
Nice. Love that.
Can I answer your question?
No, I think that's great. So So, you know, talking about values and the evolution of the company, were there any shortcuts taken? Because I think, you know, we talked about values a little bit last time. Did you ever see any shortcuts taken where, you know, someone had to step in and say, this is going against the brand or this is going against our core values, and there was a pivot?
I can recall one, the overall answer is no, but I can recall one instance where in retrospect, it was a shortcut and I was involved in it. It was a permit in 1992 that involved couponing. And it basically was a promotion. It was done on a grand scale, which was my fault. And it went over budget by $2 million. I talked about it in my book. Back in 1982, $2 million was a lot of money.
Oh, yeah.
It would have been an example of trying to grow the business the wrong way too fast.
Mm-hmm.
And we paid the price for that. Other than that experience, which I learned a lot from, in fact, my team and I vowed, okay, we're never going to use couponing again. And we didn't. It really fostered us developing a marketing strategy that became operator-centric rather than home office-centric. It's also a personal lesson for me when Jimmy Collins called me in his office, and I apologized about this thing. And he said, don't worry about it. We've invested $2 million in your education, and we know you'll never make that mistake again. So he reinforced a value that if they trusted you, they were willing to give you room to make some mistakes. The answer to your question is no. Truett used to have a saying, I'm not interested in how big we get. I'm more interested in getting better. And if we get better, we'll get bigger.
I'm writing that down. So before I answer my next question, not interested in getting bigger, getting better. I love that. That is awesome.
Better. And if we get better, we get bigger. And if we get better, we'll get bigger.
Yes, I love that.
Gino, stay here for 1 second. I want to unpack this a little bit because we call it getting out over your skis. And we see young business people doing that sometimes. What would you say to the young business person that is obsessed with growth but sacrificing the brand? Because I think that's what you're describing right there.
Yes. Well, there's several things that if I saw it, I would point it out.
Yeah.
Okay. Number one is discounting, dealing, undermining the price value of your product or service. If you routinely, that means you're in hot pursuit of transactions at almost no cost, and implicitly you're undervaluing the value of your brand. You're undercutting the value of your brand. I think another telltale sign is using debt or too much public money to grow too fast. I've seen multiple companies in the restaurant industry do that. And what happens when you grow too fast, it often will undermine the infrastructure's ability to support that growth and support it the right way. Well, there's marketing support, quality control, customer feedback, credibility of accounting systems, etc. So using debt to grow or stock offering, if you haven't built the proper infrastructure before you launch that kind of growth, you're going to get out ahead of your skis. I think a third one is when you hire a lot of talent who may be very competent in terms of their skill set, but you're willing to compromise cultural or personal chemistry fit.
Yes.
Just because you need that skill set. Truett was very wise about this. He told me in my last interview, in fact, he said, we don't train culture here, we hire it. And so if you hire a lot of people fast and you sacrifice the discipline of focusing on values and personal chemistry fit, team member fit, then you're sacrificing your culture. And you can never build a great brand if you've got a weak culture. It just won't work. Because the benefit of a great culture is implicitly in a great culture, you're empowering people to make decisions on their own because they know what's important. We were very clear about the corporate purpose. He was very clear about issues of integrity, honesty, stewardship, teamwork, fun. And if anyone sensed that we were about to make a decision that got outside those kind of values, outside those boundaries, we stopped. We back up. So the management of culture, which is I've already alluded to it, but to me that's the biggest pitfall is when leaders get so focused on growth they don't pay enough attention to managing their culture.
Wow.
Managing clarity around their purpose, why they exist, managing clarity around the values that you want decisions to be made through, builder of values. Leaders got to be all over that all the time. And if you're hyperventilate over fast growth, and that's all that matters to you, you probably won't do that. You won't manage culture well. So, and I guess that leads to my final point. I think a lot of people get focused on growth because they're trying to position the company to sell it. They're not focused on building long-term sustained performance. Well, in that environment, suddenly people don't think about careers. They think about 3 or 4 years and spinning out and going somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So to me, that is the ultimate stick of dynamite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. One more question for me, Jake, and then I really want to wrap this up. I've taken a bunch of quotes and stuff. I really have to wrap this up because there's so many nuggets in here. What's the one thing that you learned from Chick-fil-A that you incorporated into your own personal life?
That's a great question, Gina. It's actually very simple. Being very clear about why I exist. What is my purpose? Mm. And having consistent, constant focus on that, not only by me, but by Diane and my family. And our purpose is not that much different than Chick-fil-A's, to honor God, be a good steward, and have a good influence on the people we come in contact with. That whole process of writing that corporate purpose had an incredible effect on me. It did on most of us. And when you work in an environment where honoring God and positive influence is a priority, and it's clear that the only way you're going to do those two things is by being a great steward with people and money,
mm-hmm.
it affects you. And those perspectives and those kind of disciplines bleed into your own life. So I there's no question in my mind. The day we got clarity on why Chick-fil-A existed started to develop, helped me to develop clarity on why I was here.
Wow, that is, I love that.
Clarity will set you free, Gino. And Steve, you're still doing it and still living the values because you're a positive influence on my life. And I thank you for that. I do have one more question for you though. I'm sorry. I had only one.
Just one.
Was there ever strategy sessions within the organization or goals on building an enduring organization? Because I can't imagine that it just happened organically.
Oh, all the time. I mean, we were all under the same mandate as the way we were treated when we interviewed with Truett and Jimmy Collins. And what I mean by that was Truett and Jimmy both felt that the most important decision they made at Chick-fil-A was who they invited to join the organization, whether it's staff or op. Well, now think about that. That means one of the most important things I do as an officer in the business is to stay engaged in the process of vetting and interviewing and selecting anyone that's going to be part of the marketing department, no matter what their role. Just as Truett and Jimmy stayed engaged in every officer candidate that was being considered. So if you're committed to the brand and you're committed to having a long-term career at the brand, then you're never going to waver from the discipline of the most important thing I do here is who I invite into my department,
mm-hmm.
or into the business, mm-hmm. or who we invite to be a Chick-fil-A operator. Mm-hmm. I mean, he told operators all the time to he was very direct. Do not ever forget, you represent not just Chick-fil-A, you represent me.
Yes.
And that verse on his desk, Proverbs 22:1, was serious business to him. A name is to be more valued than great riches, money, silver, and gold. So when you work in that sort of environment, that sort of culture, it not only gives clear rails, but it's quite empowering because it makes very clear what your priorities are as a leader. Strategy is important, but money follows strategy, but culture eats both of them. And if you're not focused on the right things to keep your culture healthy and clear, then you can lose culture pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty wow. quick. So leaders take their eyes off of it and lose it pretty quick.
Let me follow up with a bunch of quotes, everybody. I want you to take, if you're at home, take a pen and paper out because they're really, really impactful from the show. Your brand is not marketing. Your brand is the totality of your customer experience. Don't outgrow your infrastructure. You're not interested in getting bigger. You're interested in getting better, which will ultimately get you bigger. You're not chasing money. You're chasing the opportunity, which ultimately leads to the money. It's just very similar. your career is the fulfillment of a dream. That's what I want everyone to really espouse to, have their career. That's the fulfillment of what they're dreaming about. I love this one. Great culture is the empowering people to make decisions on their own. That is how you empower your employees. That's a very powerful quote. Let me say that again. Great culture is empowering people to make decisions on their own. And we didn't mention this on this show, but when you're hiring people, the three C's by Mr. Steve Robinson: character, chemistry, and being competent. And you don't hire for skills only. You hire for culture. That's correct.
I would even say, Gino, if Chick-fil-A ever got to a point, they're not, but if they ever some down in the future, yeah, they're so eat up with growth and they're starting to hire people principally around competency.
Mm-hmm.
And they start taking their eye on character and chemistry, they're running the risk of losing the business.
Mm-hmm. Especially building the business based on that, because they're not short-termism, they're long-termism. They're in it for the long term.
A long-term focused business.
And you want to work for that, everybody. I mean, it's great in the short run when you're young and you're flipping out a company every 5 years, you're making the cash, but then you've got to do it all over again. And it doesn't feel like a career. It just feels like you're churning and burning. You're not building anything sustainable.
What's that do for your soul, though? Like, you're churning and burning. Do you really have purpose or soul at that point?
There you go, Jay. I would say, I'll sum it up this way. If that's what you're doing, turn around and see who's following.
Mm.
What kind of fellowship have you developed? What kind of legacy have you left? Is it just around making money? Or mm-hmm. have you impacted somebody's life, impacted somebody's marriage, somebody's kids? Has it led to a better life, home life for you and your family?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one of the family is valued at Chick-fil-A, and not just for the customers, but for everybody who's part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, Truett, God bless him. He graduated. He went to be with his savior in 2014, but he is still leaving a legacy of healthy, thriving families. That's mm-hmm. what I want.
That's beautiful.
And if I'm a business owner or a business leader, I would think that's what most people would want.
Well, I want to summarize a little bit of my take on our conversation. And this is for the people getting into business for themselves now. Find something that you truly enjoy, the vehicle that you want to be a part of, and stick it. Plant your flag and allow it to grow over time. Stop with this shiny object syndrome and chasing short-term dollars, because as you can see, a long time run up to 100 million and then a long time run up to the billions. But this is an iconic brand. It's an enduring brand, and it's impacted millions of people's lives in a positive way. That's the difference.
Let me add right there. It took Chick-fil-A from 1967 to 2001 to hit the first $1 billion.
Mm-hmm.
That's commitment.
Since 2001 to 2021, they've gone to $17
billion. Wow.
The momentum of being focused on long-term, healthy culture, healthy team members, not chasing short-term results, building relationships, all the things I talk about in my book is the flywheel just keeps going faster and faster and faster, and same-store sales keeps going bigger and bigger. And so you look up and a business that 20 years ago was $1 billion is $17 billion.
And healthy and thriving and very little debt. And continuing to expand. Those are things that we need to add on. It's not just flash in a pan. These are real assets.
Yes.
It's real, tangible trademark. It's real.
Virtually no debt.
Yes.
I'm going to say this just because I can't help myself, but just imagine if our government operated this way. We're going to end on that one, folks. Oh.
It's insanity. It's insanity. I won't go down that path.
We'll put a bookend on that one, but I think we're on the same page. So, Steve, the wisdom is just very much appreciated, and thank you for just being a leader and sharing your journey and all your wisdom with us. We can't thank you enough. Really appreciate your time today.
Well, it's my pleasure, Jay. Gino, good to be with both of you again.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
See you.
Bye.